If you want to get a genetic test, there are now companies offering this very service. These often don't look at the whole genome, but small, relevant parts. So what can they tell us? Marco Naharis is a medical student at the University of Oxford who gave one a go.
I chose to get my DNA tested because I think it's just another health metric, just like knowing your body mass index or your full blood count. And it could tell me what risk factors I might have for certain genetic diseases, or what medicines might work better or worse for certain conditions that I might develop. And also because I did a research project on schizophrenia genetics and I wanted to know what my genetic risk factor for schizophrenia was. It was actually a really simple process. I signed up online and I received a pack through the mail. That included a plastic tube for me to provide a saliva sample, and I mailed it back. And in 3 months, I received my results online, and the service provided an interpretation for some gene versions, but I was also able to download my raw data so I could check it against my own research. I found out lots of really cool things, such as having some very distant ancestry from East Asia, Southern Europe, South Asia, and even the Middle East. And I even have Neanderthal DNA. Thankfully, I also found out that I don't carry any risk genes for certain conditions like cystic fibrosis, Alzheimer's disease, and Parkinson's disease. But sadly, now I've also found out why I'm so lactose intolerant and shorter than your average male at 5'7".
Marco Naharis here on The Naked Scientists. So Marco's test told him he had no risk factors for certain diseases. Always nice to know. But these tests can tell you some things you might be less keen to hear. If you had a crystal ball that would reveal your disease destiny, would you look inside it? A lot of people get DNA testing from professional health services for this very reason. They might have already had a disease and are looking for a genetic cause, or they might have a family history of a disease and want to know if they've got it. But this information can be a blessing or a curse, and equally it's not always clear what it means, which is where genetic counsellors come in.
My name is Jonathan Roberts. I'm a genetic counsellor and I'm a PhD student at King's College London and the Wellcome Genome Campus. Genetic counsellors work in hospitals alongside other health professionals, and it's a focusing on the supporting people as they go through genetic testing. So genetic testing can be quite a challenging process, both in terms of the amount of information you have to take on, but also there's an emotional aspect to lots of genetic testing. You know, it can be a significant piece of news. There's also a familial aspect. So it doesn't just affect you, it affects your family in lots of cases. So there's lots of other aspects that patients need supporting with as they go through genetic testing. Genetic counsellor's job is to do. I guess there's a number of areas that you can kind of split genetics into. One is prenatal testing. So this is when you're looking for the cause of a sort of developmental delay or childhood onset condition. So an example of this might be something like cystic fibrosis, you may have heard of. This is a recessive condition, so you have to have a copy from both mum and dad. And cystic fibrosis causes a lot of problems with things like breathing, and it affects lots of other organs. And you can test for that, and that can be very useful if you have a diagnosis for that in a child in terms of allowing families to kind of make future decisions in terms of family planning. There's other stuff, things like cancer is a big part of genetic counsellor's workload. So the two most famous genes are probably BRCA1 and BRCA2. So Angelina Jolie made these a lot more famous when she had testing for BRCA1. And this was a gene that caused an increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer, as well as a few others. And it's not a certainty. So if you have an alteration in one of these genes, you're not definitely going to get breast or ovarian cancer, but it does lead to a significantly increased risk. And what you can do is you can have preventative measures, or so things like increased screening from a certain age, or if you choose to, risk-reducing surgery, so say mastectomy, for example. But then there's lots of other areas. So cardiac genetics is something that's a growing area as well. And that's similar to cancer genetics in a way that often you're dealing with increased risks, and often your genetic test can lead to quite clear kind of treatment and diagnostic options.
I suppose if you're likely to have a heart attack, you can be like, well, I'm going to cut down on my fatty foods and do some cardio. There are some very clear cut things you can do about it. But there's also many conditions that we don't as yet know of any cure. And this could be something like Huntington's. So what happens if someone knows they're likely or definitely going to get something that we can't cure?
So Huntington's disease is a good example of something where there's no treatment for the disease. That you can treat the symptoms, but there's no way of halting the progression of the disease. That is a very challenging case for genetic counselling, because the primary focus then is allowing a patient to make the decision that's right for them. So actually, in the case of Huntington's disease, most people choose not to know. But there are some people who would like to know in terms of planning their life and having the uncertainty taken away. And it's about choice, and it's about control. And for some people in that situation, control is choosing to know and choosing to plan their lives and choosing to have that information. And for some people, choosing is not to know.
Huntington's disease is caused by a mutation in a single gene. And if a test picks up the change we know is responsible, it's pretty much guaranteed you'll develop symptoms. But a lot of diseases aren't so clear-cut. Lots of genes might only slightly affect your chances of developing cancer or heart attacks, so this can mean the results of a genetic test aren't always clear.
So I think helping patients understand risk is a really important and quite challenging part of genetic counselling, because risk is something that can be explained in lots of different ways. So you can have a lifetime risk. So you might say you have an 80% risk or something over your lifetime. You might also explain it in a 10-year risk. So you might say, if somebody's 30, you might say in the next 10 years, your risk is this. When you're talking about those, you're talking about absolute risks. You're talking about the clear chance that something is going to happen. An example of an absolute risk is a coin toss. The absolute risk of getting heads is 50%. Then you might talk about relative risk. And relative risk is a bit more tricky, because then you're talking about risk, one risk compared to another. So let's say your risk of something is 1%. And then it goes up to 2%. Now, you could say that that's a 1% absolute increased risk, but as a relative risk, it's doubled. So that means it's 100%. So when you're giving risk figures, relative risk can sound very scary, because you might say your risk has gone up 100%. And actually, all it's done is gone up from 1% to 2%. So it's very important to be very clear and go through the risks in quite a lot of detail, because there's lots of different ways you can talk about risk, and that can be quite confusing and then quite worrying for patients.
Genetic counsellors provide this service to take you through these results. But you can also get some of this information from kits you can buy online. And there have been concerns in the past that some services might provide inaccurate results or fail to provide context or clarity. However, just this week, in a landmark ruling, the FDA, the Food and Drugs Administration, gave permission for home testing kit 23andMe to send people information about their risks of 10 diseases, which include Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, which means we're likely to see a lot more of these home testing services in the future. So can you trust what you see in a test you get online?
So it depends a little bit on what they're looking for. Tests can look for different things. One of the things they can look for is single genes that are the cause of certain conditions, like early onset Alzheimer's or BRCA1 and BRCA2. What they do is they look for specific points in those genes, so specific genetic changes that they know cause those conditions. So if they find one of these genetic changes, that's a pretty clear result. That's going to be quite accurate. What's important with a lot of these direct-to-consumer tests is that they don't look across the whole gene. Very often, they're just looking for the particular points they know about. So if they don't find something, that doesn't rule out there being a genetic change. There could still be something. So this is what we refer to as positive and negative predictive value. So positive predictive value means, what's the chance of this finding being true? Is it real? And the positive predictive value of a lot of these tests is very high. But the negative predictive value, which is the chances, is this a real negative test? It can often be low. So that means there could still be a gene change that they haven't found. So my advice to those people who have those tests would be, if you have any questions, then you could, seek a referral and get professional advice, because it's important to understand the real meaning of these tests.
And whatever kind of test you get, Jonathan highlighted that it's key you know what kind of results you might get, and making sure you really do want to know them.
What can happen sometimes in genetic counselling is, if someone's got a result that they don't expect. That can often have a psychologically adverse reaction. So one of the reasons that we prepare people for different types of results is that it's helpful to think through kind of, you know, how much of an effect that's going to have on your life. And what can really kind of hit people hard in terms of genetic testing is when you get a result and you just weren't expecting it. So that's one of the reasons that a lot of our focus is placed on trying to explain to people, kind of doing informed consent and allowing people to think through the implications of a genetic test.
And unlike other indications of your health, like your blood pressure or your weight, DNA is very different. For example, if you've got a gene for something, your family are likely to have it too. And they didn't get a genetic test, so do you tell them? Should you have to? It's an open question, but people are asking it in the courts.
A woman is currently suing a hospital for not disclosing genetic information. So her father had Huntington's disease, and for various different reasons, he decided not to disclose this information to her. And then she went and she had a child. And then later on, it was disclosed by accident by a health professional that the diagnosis was Huntington's disease. So then this woman Googles, as you would do, and then finds out this is inherited and it's untreatable. And she says she wouldn't have gone and had a child if she had known there was this risk in the family. She'd have had testing first. She had testing, and it turns out that she has inherited the HD gene from her father. So she is arguing that the health professionals had a duty to break her father's confidentiality and tell her about the genetic tests. And of course, this is difficult for the hospital because health professionals are so used to seeing confidentiality as this kind of sacrosanct thing. But in genetics, it raises a really important question of whose information is it? Because it's a piece of information for you, but it's also your family's information. So that's going through the courts. That's going to be a really interesting outcome in terms of healthcare practice and genetics practice.